Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
Hi.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Oh, lovely.
Tragic train wreck today.
Ben, do you ever just feel squanchy?
Squanchy?
Do you feel
Is that a Rick and Morty reference?
Yeah.
Squanchy? I mean,
it just occurred to me that, you know, do you?
I don't understand what you mean. I squanch. Everybody squanches.
Squanch.
All right. Yeah, but I mean, do you feel squanchy?
I mean, well, I haven't shaved in like 4 days.
And when you feel squanchy, I mean, what
is this what squanchy
like?
Feels like?
Yeah.
It might be. Who
I have
knows?
No idea.
It's up
Who
to
knows?
Interpretation, perhaps.
All right. I'm afraid to interpret that.
Well, we'll leave it up to interpretation.
Okay.
You can have the show back now.
Oh, great. Well, you know, it's a warm day here in Seattle. They say it's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow. And I've got to say, I was done being cold, and I'm looking forward to a little sun, but I don't like the brightness.
It's too bright, guys.
I have to go into my little editing cave. All right. Hey, let's get on with the show, friends. Let's talk about Barnes & Noble. Apparently, they're adding a kids' graphic novel section. Now, the reason I put this in the show notes is because I want to get your guys' impression from this. Do you feel that Barnes & Noble selling children's graphic novels is a threat to the business, or does it promote the industry?
So worth noting, they always have, but they've been hiding in the kids section.
So now they're just not in the kids section.
Yeah, now in the normal children's book section.
Right.
So now they'll have more exposure, which is good. It is overall good. I will say that there's a slight little bit of worry of like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Because that's very specifically one of our niches, as we are the nonprofit that tries to get more kids' books out.
Well, yeah. I don't think you need to worry about the uh-oh, because Barnes & Noble has habitually slash and burn their own employees in their own stores, and they've been doing it at an increased rate over the last couple of years. So it's really lovely that they're putting the press release out about this, but, you know, brick and mortar stores are suffering, and why a corporation of that nature makes their employees suffer to the extent they do is beyond me, but you know, that's just my humble opinion.
They also are able to get a lot more stock more readily. They probably do direct sales and stuff like that. I mean, things like manga that we can't get through Diamond Distribution, I find at Barnes & Noble.
Why is that?
I think just because they order direct, maybe, or because they have a different distribution than we do.
Yes.
Or both.
Because Diamond is Diamond.
Diamond. So in that regard, like, if we ran out of something that we might only have one or two copies of, they might have like a string of five of them, and maybe somebody might go there. So where maybe a little bit of that concern comes into play. Hopefully they would come because we give good recommendations and we do support these things, because that's kind of what you're here for, I think, in a way.
For the social aspect.
Exactly.
Cool. All right. Yeah, it does say here that the graphic novels have had long had their own section, but for years there was internal resistance to bring the graphic novels out of the kids section. So now that it's there's been a growth in sales, they're more apt to do it. Anyway. Hey, a couple weeks ago, we mentioned East of West. We might often mention East of West because it's a popular title, but apparently Amazon is developing a transhuman and East of West genre series from comic book creator Jonathan Hickman and Skybound. I've read East of West. I've read the first four trades. I don't know if it'll work as a TV show, but maybe it will, because
why do you say that?
Well, it's one of those things where it's really inventive and it's really visual, you know, and it's got this really fantastic style that it'll take a lot of money. Okay, I won't say it won't work as a TV show. It'll take a lot of money to produce as a TV show.
Of course.
And maybe Amazon has that because they have all the money in the world.
You know, everybody's looking for a new Game of Thrones right now.
Yeah.
And it may not have the erotic and gritty aspect and like constant one-on-one violence that Game of Thrones has. So my suspicion is that they will make it more Game of Thrones like, mm-hmm. and that you might be, they might start teasing out and building up relationships that you don't have in the book, because it's so overarchingly political in the comic book.
It's also really confusing.
It is very confusing.
There's too many characters.
Dude, I've been reading it since the get-go. I have to go back and reread stuff, and I still, But you know what? That's the way, but that mosaic of multiple characters and storylines and things happening, people eventually wound up getting caught up in that in Game of Thrones, and we're all excited about it. And I think that East of West offers a similar type of excitement for the reader, the viewer, participant.
It does also offer in this new Western genre that I think is going to be making an explosion.
You know, and I'm really grateful that you supported me in this theory and continue to do so.
See, I'm not as confident of Western coming up next simply because there's a generation gap of the content there. But getting the mix of stuff, I can see it coming back in that way.
Well, but we got things like the Badlands and, to a certain extent, the Mad Max stories, which are still, like, you know, the wild frontier. It may be mutated and full of martial artists and people in weird cars and guys playing their guitars and all that stuff, but it still, like, has that sentiment of the Wild West about it.
Well, and also, like, the Westworld, that's mixing the sci-fi with the Western and that sort of thing. So a mix like East of West might be a
might
good
be perfect
fit.
For it right now.
Are we talking pastiche here, people? Are we talking postmodernism?
I think we're talking post-apocalyptic at this point.
Yeah.
Well said, sir.
Just checking.
Anyway, Transhuman's also going to be a series. It's a science fiction drama set in the near future, 5 minutes into the future. I made that up. I've never read this show or read this comic, but it sounds interesting. These rival corporations offering humans the ability to genetically and robotically enhance themselves.
Mm-hmm. I've never read it either. Have you guys read it?
I didn't. I forgot most of it.
Yeah.
That one didn't make the same impact for me.
Was it just a one-volume series, though?
Yeah, it's like a one-volume series. Yeah. And I think this one that he did more designing on, and I actually can't stand to look at Hickman's art. So I kind of shut off a bit when that happens.
Well, but his graphic design stuff, I think, is fascinating.
It is.
And I love that that's always been kind of a thing he does, is designs the logos and the font styles. So, like, because that to me is an impressive artist at work building his world.
Yes.
I mean, he contributes what he can within his I don't want to say limitations, because he has multiple talents.
But yeah.
I've always thought that was the same thing with Black Monday Murders. Black Monday Murders.
That one is like so clearly a Hickman jam.
Because
he's got very graphic
design.
He's got
the weird symbols and hieroglyphs and things.
Strange symbols, redacted letters and emails.
See, that would be a more interesting movie to me than Transhuman.
So. Yeah, I think Black Monday could be a good TV show for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd have to incorporate some elements that would be budget.
I'm surprised, because do we all remember when Kelly Sue DeConnick was and her husband were forming an entire production company so they can do this kind of stuff?
Yep.
And then Amazon's just like, Mars.
Well, it's pretty funny, because I was looking back. That was one of the first things we talked about on this podcast was Kelly Sue DeConnick's and her husband's new TV venture.
Criminal Master.
Something.
Whatever. I don't know.
We all thought there was going to be a sex criminals TV show, and like within the year,
wasn't that part of the plan? Whatever happened to all those plans?
I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, nothing happened.
I think it's like most things; they get optioned and then they move on.
It's everything that they've developed is stuck and turn around.
Yeah.
Basically, to use industry lingo.
Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of the industry, Dean Haspiel is he's a well-known cartoonist. I've never heard of him. He's a well-known cartoonist.
I like him.
An emerging playwright. Well, before we talk about his play, talk to us as a cartoonist.
So I was reading a lot of his stuff at the end of the 90s. In 1997, he did a book called Billy Dogma, and soon after a book called Daydream Lullabies, and then he started illustrating for Harvey Pekar for American Splendor and a series called The Quitter. He did just a lot of kind of, it's not underground, it was just like true indie at the time. And it was just really silly kind of slice of life mixing with other genres. The Billy Dogma stuff was pretty great because Billy Dogma was kind of a superhero who was really quirky, kind of had a little bit of a madman vibe. So I always liked him for doing that. And then he did he illustrated Inverna Lopez's Cuba, My Revolution, published by Vertigo, and that was covered by the New York Post, NPR, and Graphic Novel Reporter. And then that same year, he got an Emmy Award for title design for HBO's Bored to Death. So, like, the guy does well everywhere else but in the comics industry. Because he's just never, I don't think he's ever hit it big money-wise in comics industry. So then
well, who has, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. So then he started doing other experiments. He created Trip City, which is a Brooklyn-filtered multimedia literary arts salon. And then he started doing plays in 2014. So that started with Switch to Kill and Harry Carey Kane, a.k.a. Die Again. Mm-hmm. I like his titles.
Well, his most recent title is The Last Bar at the End of the World, and it's open at Urban Stages in Manhattan. And it caught my eye for a couple of reasons. One is the title. Now, I'm being kind of a cynical theater kid here. And Cole and I, as we discussed last week, are theater kids. Although, you know.
I amended it to folks.
Theater
because
folk.
You got all, you know.
I'm 42 and I'm squanchy. Like, I'm not a kid anymore.
Yeah, you got all squanchy about it.
I got all squanchy. The Last Bar at the End of the World sounds like a lot of plays that I've already seen.
Mm. Okay, yeah. What's the premise?
I don't know.
Perfect.
It says,
I just know it's boring.
Well, I mean, I haven't read the
just
thing.
Just within the title in particular? Yeah. Or
it sounds like it's The Last Bar at the End of the World. I've read plenty of stories. Neil Gaiman did a book basically about that.
That's what I thought it was.
Or Only the End of the World Again. Oh, that's kind of different. Yeah, that was a Lovecraft thing.
It's a show about death and their search for meaning and even Jack Kirby. So he puts King Kirby in there. But it also caught my eye because it stars Seth Gilliam from The Wire and also Walking Dead. A lot of Wire actors crossed over to The Walking Dead, which I really appreciated. And Astoya, who's known for her adult film work and activism, but also an award-winning actress. I didn't know that until everybody started teasing me about it. Oh, there's an adult film star in the show.
Hey, she's great. She's a great media personality.
Mm-hmm.
So,
All right. So, so that's all I have to say about that. The Last Bar at the End of the World. If you're in New York, check it out. Tell us what they say about Jack Kirby, because we are interested. Now, let's move on to a segment that we've had before. It's called Recommendation Corner. And here are some more hypothetical customers that I'm going to give you. They've entered the store, or you're talking to them at a party, and you have to provide a recommendation for them. Now, I guess I was feeling kind of silly when I wrote these, because they are all fictional movie characters. So forgive me if this is a really dumb bit. I'm willing to own it.
No,
all right. They all can't be winners. All right. He's a New York cop out to visit his estranged wife in L.A. at her new job for an overseas investment firm. The Christmas party is just getting started, and he's out of his element. What should he read to relax in this new West Coast culture, and which will help drown out the sound of gunfire? Of course, I'm referring to John McClane from Die Hard, Bruce Willis's character. What do you got for me?
So all of my recommendations are with the goal of causing the characters existential breakdowns and to implode the space-time continuum. So I would recommend to him Die Hard, Year One, by Howard Chaykin, published by Boom in 2010. And so that way he can question his reality and why anybody would have Howard Chaykin write him.
So. And look to see if anybody's in the hallway.
And I
hate Howard Chaykin so much.
I think we all took an interesting take on this, so I'm curious to know.
Yeah. Well, I started looking at Christmas-themed, holiday-themed adventure stories, or horror,
And my first was Klaus by Grant Morrison and Dan Mora from Boom Studios, which is basically the story of Santa Claus, the origin of Santa, told through this adult filter. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's like one of the old Rankin and Bass Santa Claus is Coming to Town animated shows. That's just a little bit dialed up for adults. And I liked Klaus, but Mora's artwork is phenomenal. Also, there was Hellboy Krampuschnacht by Mike Mignola and Adam Hughes from Dark Horse, which is a one-shot. Came out last Christmas. It told the story of Hellboy meeting and defeating Krampus. And then lastly is Happy by Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson about, which has been adapted to, surprisingly enough, an ongoing series on Sci-Fi Channel about a broken down, corrupt drug addict alcoholic cop who is
you've broken Nicole.
I'm sorry, Nicole. Who thinks he's in a drug addled fit when this flying blue pony comes to Colin and asks him to help rescue his illegitimate daughter. And actually, I enjoyed the series, but I gotta tell you, I think I enjoyed the TV series more, and I shouldn't have, because it's comprised of all the type of violence and gleeful violence and sadism that I usually hate, but I was just in a mood.
It's okay. You can give into it.
Do you got something?
I kind of wanted him to like love hate things, so I offered Chew. Like, it's wacky and weird, doesn't make sense. Like, he probably would hate it, but I feel like he also would like not stop reading it in some way. I don't know why. And then I just thought something over the top that would just make him feel right at home, like Butcher Baker, Righteous Maker, which is just ridiculous. I have no real logic for these. Right.
There's no real logic to these questions. The second one, he's a high school kid who accidentally traveled back to 1955 in his eccentric scientist friend's time machine. What should he pick up at the local comic book store to both A, read so he doesn't accidentally sleep with his own mom, and B, bring back with him to 1985 because it'll be worth a lot of money? I am, of course, am referring to Marty McFly from Back to the Future. Nicole, do you have something from Marty McFly?
Well, I don't think these things are worth anything except number one of Rick and Morty, surprisingly. But I thought Rick and Morty would be kind of funny because it's a riff off of that.
Exactly.
And then I thought Paper Girls because there's more weird, like, time travel-y things. I was trying to think of music stuff because he likes music, but I don't know if there's been a Hendrix comic book, but I would think something like that.
Yeah, there was a Bill Sienkiewicz hardbound thing that actually had a disc in it that was unproduced music, right?
Yeah, so
it was studio outtakes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Which
I've been always wanted to get for Ben for Christmas and keep forgetting. So
and now you
Ben,
gotta believe it.
I just ruined Christmas for you.
Anyway,
at some point in the future.
Cool. Excellent. Thanks, Nicole. Cole, do you have anything for...
I talked over you.
It's you. Go ahead.
It is me.
Yeah.
Feel free to talk over Cole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you got, sir?
I got nothing else. Go.
So I was thinking that, you know, what better book to read than a book about people who time travel and don't learn their lessons and steal things from the past and give to the future, and Chrononauts by Mark Millar and Sean Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Nice. That's a good choice.
You got something for Martin McFly?
I was saying IDW has been publishing Back to the Future comics, specifically Biff to the Future, and so that way he can go check that out and counteract Biff's time traveling shenanigans.
All right. She's a news reporter working on a story about a man who is about to be hanged for murder, but she believes him to be innocent. Through it all, she has to contend with her obnoxious, loudmouth, manipulative editor, who also happens to be her ex-husband. I, of course, am referring to Rosalind Russell's character of Hildy Johnson in His Girl Friday. I just went to my DVD collection. His Girl Friday is one of my favorite movies. Cole, do you got something for Hildy?
Yeah, see, I'm just like sticking to themes that recommendations that are like on a theme with the actual movie, and you guys are like being far more creative. One of my favorite comics about a reporter by a reporter is, of course, Marvel's by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. That was I still recommend that book. Ross's photorealistic paintings are marvelous, and that book reignited a lost love of Marvel, because what it is basically is the story of Ben Urich, who we meet in the Daredevil TV series.
Yeah.
Who's African American in the TV series and who dies, but is white in the comics and is still alive.
Yeah. Quick thing, it's not Ben Urich.
It's not?
No, because Ben Urich's the reporter. This is the photographer who later on dies of cancer, so it's not Ben.
Who is it?
I forget his name, but it's not Ben. Oh. Yeah. Phil. Maybe.
Nope, you're right. It was so, but basically what it is the, someone look it up while I'm vamping here. But it's the story of this reporter, Phil, and he's telling you the story of the rise of the Marvels, the rise of the superheroes, and basically telling you the story of the origin of the entire Marvel universe from the guy on the street. And since it's done in this, and this is the first time that readers met, the mainstream met
Phil, Sheldon, Phil Sheldon. Sheldon.
Okay.
All right.
Phil.
And the other book, you know, here's where I'm getting Urich from is there was a series in 2002 called Deadline by Bill Roseman and illustrated by Guy Davis. And if you recall, Guy Davis is actually one of my favorite artists. I think the lead character in it is a protege. The female character is a protege.
Yeah, I think so.
Of Urich's.
Yeah.
Anyway, and she gets caught up in. Trying to solve this murder mystery with supernatural characters. So, Deadline. And I remember enjoying Deadline quite a bit, but I need to go back and reread it.
All right, cool. Nicole, what do you got for Hildy?
I don't know this movie, so I have no idea. So I just thought like Velvet might feel pretty cathartic for her from Ed Brubaker, because she's just a lady who's like discounted, but she's actually like the person with all the information.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And then I thought I Was the Cat might be interesting, because it's like an interesting take on like journalism, and the cat is actually responsible for all
the world's changes.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Chris, do you have anything for Hildy Johnson?
I also have not seen the movie, so
y'all gotta watch this movie.
So I Wikipedia'd it, and it just was described as a screwball comedy crime, and I figured The Fix.
Oh yeah.
Which is a very screwball comedy crime about two corrupt cops who solve their own cases, that their own crimes that they commit, and they get basically blackmailed by the local crime lord and into doing some very dangerous jobs, which includes putting them on the path to the local police force's top agent, who is a dog, Pickles the dog.
He's a beagle.
Yeah, he's a beagle. That's like the best crime, best drug sniffer or something like that. And Pickles is a pretty main character. So that was the best I could come up with. Your guess was much better than mine.
All right. Well, yeah, check out His Girl Friday. It's starring Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell, based on the play The Front Page by MacArthur and Hecht, and it's one of my favorite films. He was a computer programmer hacker, but since he took the red pill, he's woken up in a living nightmare of a post-environmental world, and he might be the one to set the remaining humans free from the machines. What should he read to transport him back into the Matrix world he used to know and love? Of course, this is Keanu Reeves as Neo from The Matrix. What you got, Chris? What do you got?
The Wachowski siblings actually did create their own comic publishing company called Burly Man Entertainment, and they created the Matrix anthology books, which featured guests, creators from all over the industry doing stories that took place in and outside the Matrix. Peter Bagg, who was local to Seattle, did one that was specifically about a guy who just saw the movie The Matrix and thought what kind of stupid idea this was as the agents were watching him to make sure the Matrix was doing its job. And also from Burly Man Entertainment, I would also recommend Doc Frankenstein, which is by Steve Scrosi, which also has that kind of crazy, weird sci-fi stuff. And Shaolin Cowboy, which is by Jeff Darrow, which is very, very beautiful. And I don't know how to even describe that plot to that story. It's just a guy going around.
Story. It's just all,
just all,
you know,
action.
The fascination we all had with the Where's Waldo books?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jeff Darrow is like, the detailing he puts into his comics is There's got to be a better way of describing it than eye popping. I mean, it's a to cigarette butts on the sidewalk. He just finite detail in his illustrations. And what was Hard Boiled was the one he did in the 80s.
Hard Boiled and Big Guy.
And we didn't really see anything of that magnitude until Shaolin Cowboy came out. And it's not surprising because 90s. He probably needed a long
rest. Yeah, I was going to ask, did it take him years to do these books?
Well, no, he seems to be pretty.
Some of them take years. He disappears from time to time.
He does, because Shaolin Cowboy is kind of in limbo, because that's the only
he's been doing new ones.
Yeah,
but I mean, when is the last one, most recent one, come out?
Like last year.
Fairly recently.
Right, okay, that's what
And he's got another one coming up,
right.
So yeah.
I have lost track of where I am in Shaolin Cowboy, and it's really not that big a deal, because it's not like it has a plot.
No,
I mean, it's
no,
really just all about these elaborate fight scenes and stuff, and it's just eye candy.
Cool. Yes.
All right,
like the Matrix movies.
Like the Matrix, yeah.
You got anything for Neo from
No,
the
I was just going to talk more about Shaolin Cowboy.
Okay.
And I did that.
All right, Nicole.
But I didn't talk over Nicole yet, so I...
Give it a second.
Okay. All right, Nicole, do you have anything for Neo?
So any chance I can...
Oh, that reminds me.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm out of here. No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
table.
Yeah, table. Flip. So I would recommend Green Wake. It's a supernatural one, but it's that kind of like there's two different dimensions maybe, like what's going on, what's real, and dealing with trauma. I love that. I just love that book. And then Hacktivist, because it's a bunch of like social media guys trying to hack into the system and do what's right, or and Friends Forever.
Let's recommend the John Wick comics.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Why not?
Yes.
Yeah. All so right. He can see himself and go, whoa.
Whoa.
Or the Bill and Ted comics. Didn't Evan Dorkin do Bill and Ted comics?
Yep. Oh, and there's been new ones, too.
Yeah, there has. Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Wow, yeah.
Anyway, we're going to skip this final one because we got to move on to Book Report, but keep your notes because we'll come back to it. So let's do Book Report, and Nicole, let's start with you. What do you got for us?
So I have a new book from Vera Broskull, and it's published by First Second. You may know Vera's name from Anya's Ghost, very popular series from many, many years ago. This one is a fairly true to her real life of when she was a young girl, and she really wanted to fit in. She's Russian, and she really wanted to fit in with her American friends, but all the girls are kind of well-to-do, and they have American Girl dolls, and they have like just the best sleepovers with all the things that you're supposed to have, and she thinks it's like so great, but she doesn't really fit in with any of them. So she's like, I'll throw a slumber party for everybody, and I'll have all the elements. And she does sort of like not quite right, and all the girls will leave in the middle of the night while she's sleeping.
Oh.
Yeah. So she's looking to fit in with people, and she goes to her Russian Orthodox church on Sunday and talks to another girl, and she tells her about camp that you can get like through the church and stuff like that. So she's like, that's it. I'm going to go to camp. It's going to be really great. I'm going to make all these friends. Everything's going to be wonderful. And it's totally not at all. Like so many things go wrong. And she's pretty much miserable for upwards of a few weeks. But it is really delightful because it's got that feeling like I love that these coming of age stories because, you know, you can see yourself in there periodically, or you can see this person's world and how they experience life if you don't personally relate to it. So I very much highly recommend Be Prepared. I think it was a really charming story. And one other element that I really appreciated was it was very real. So you know how in a story, like the protagonist will be kind of like, well, I'm good and I should have all these things in my life and all the other people are being mean to me. Like there's kind of that sort of give and take between characters. This one, like, no, everyone's just actual humans. So sometimes she's crappy to people and people are crappy to her and different things happen. And she tidied some things up in the story to make it, you know, a good story because real life isn't always like neat and tidy with a bow. So, you know, I think overall it was just a great experience and a little fresher take with that whole, like, not everyone's great, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would definitely recommend Be Prepared by Vera Broskull.
Cool. Thank you, Nicole.
Hopefully I'm smart. Anyway.
Well, Vera, if you're listening, email us and tell us how to pronounce your
Absolutely.
Last name.
Absolutely.
And of course, she's listening. Mm-hmm. Chris Casseau, what do you got for us?
I read the first issue of the new Aliens miniseries from Dark Horse. It's called Aliens Dust to Dust, and it is written and drawn by Gabriel Hardman. I like a lot of his work. He does The Invisible Republic for Image. He just did Green Lantern Earth One hardcover. And it's basically the breakout of an alien infestation on a populated planet. So it's don't get to see that too often. You get to see it usually on space stations. And so it's about all that general chaos, and it's following this little boy and his mom. And like the moment he wakes up to like a gunshot outside, he sees that there's like one of the face huggers on his mom, and it just falls off, and they don't know what that did. So they're like, let's just keep going. And you're like, oh, okay. So it's just bad things continually happening. I just really, really like Gabriel Hardman. I like his style, and I also love that the cover reminds me of the Three Wolves Howling at the Moon t-shirts.
Yeah! I wouldn't have thought of that if you hadn't said anything, but yeah.
And also, he signed it 2017, so in my headcanon, he's like, I drew some aliens and shared it, and they were like, do you want to just draw the rest of it and make a full story? And he's like, okay.
Is the little boy the protagonist we follow through the story?
Pretty much, yeah.
Is it going to be a limited series? Or?
Four issues.
Four-issue
series. And so it's just things getting from bad to worse. And you kind of, I'm not going to say it's predictable, but you know what's going down.
I mean, it's aliens,
it's
right?
Aliens,
things are
right.
going to be horrible.
Exactly.
You can kind of...
You know,
bad speculate.
It doesn't talk about the why and the how. You just don't care with an alien story anymore. You just like just break
really
through the chest
blood.
And acid. Yes, got yes. the acid. Let's second mouth. Good to go. Let's go.
Yeah, it's like that Batman origin story. We know the aliens. Just tell us interesting stories. I like that Dark Horse does number one of four. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, generally so. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Now I just really want to see an aliens flashback that sees like a bunch of pearl necklaces breaking, and it's just they're getting the crossovers mixed up.
Yeah,
sorry,
Crime Alley.
Yeah, Crime Alley, Alien Crime Alley.
Well, we did Alien Batman, didn't we, or was it Alien Superman?
Both.
Yeah,
we've done Alien everything. We've done Alien Me at some point. We don't even know it.
in another multi-dimension. All right, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I have been reading. Cochet the Deathless, which is a spin-off from Hellboy, written by Mike Mignola and drawn by Ben Stenbeck and colors by the amazing Dave Stewart. So it's up to, I think it's up to four issues now, and it's a six-issue limited series. And Cochet is one of Hellboy's villains from way back. But the story is a bit of a flashback within a flashback within a flashback because, you know, the last time we saw Hellboy, he died. But he was sitting in a bar in Hell, and... he's been there a long time, and the story of Cochet is that Hellboy meets Cochet in the bar, and they start swapping stories, and Hellboy asks him, you know, some questions, and basically says, well, it's a long story, and of course Hellboy's response is, pal, I got nothing but time. So, and Cochet's story goes all the way back to like medieval Russia, and intertwines with dragons, and of course the witch Baba Yaga, and all that stuff. And thoroughly enjoying this series. Stenbeck's style is not as geometrical or angular as Mignola's, but it's comparable. And of course, Stevens knows how to tell stories with these characters and the colors. There's a lot of blacks and grays, but when the colors are vibrant, they are super vibrant, and really dramatic. And you know, I'm the kind of person that usually will avoid a miniseries. I'm more inclined to stick with an ongoing series and let the miniseries run their course, and then read them as as trades. And I probably would have done that, but, you know, my beloved friend Chris started signing me up for a subscription, and he probably asked me if that was cool, and I said yes, and I wasn't thinking about what I was doing.
Sounds about right.
But that's okay, because I am really enjoying this series, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's basically a dark fairy tale, mm-hmm. And it's got great Mignola covers, and I recommend it if you like the like very old school or Russian mythology or older, grimmer fairy tales, and this is the book for you, and I happen to like those things, so I'm really enjoying it.
Cool.
All right. Koshier the Deathless. Thank you, Cole. Mm-hmm. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show, but coming up is quiz time. Before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Subscribe to this. I just said that. Send us an email. perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions begrudgingly come to us from Nicole. She hates it every time I assign her a quiz time.
So, since we did Recommendation Corner, I was thinking about retail, you know, like having to give recommendations. And then I thought, well, like, what about librarians, and how about librarians in comic books? Which characters are actual librarians? It's very exhilarating. This is going to be the best quiz time of your life. Okay.
Do it quietly.
So, I'm going to talk about each one, and you tell me the name. Okay? It's mm-hmm. very simple. Okay, great. So, he's the head librarian at Middleton Public Library, fighting against the forces of ignorance and darkness. He travels to the farthest reaches of the galaxy in search of overdue books. Wearing his super thick bottle glasses and armed with an arsenal of high technology weapons, he strikes fear into uncooperative borrowers and can take on virtually any foe, from zombies to renegade literary characters. Yeah, I didn't really know about this either until I searched it. It's Rex Liebrus, and it's from Slave Labor. Okay, this is an easy one next up. This character serves on Dream's Palace staff as the chief librarian, overseeing a collection of every book that has ever been imagined, even if the book was never published or even written. As a result of his loyalty and tenacity, Dream has relied on his counsel and expanded his responsibilities. He is also Morpheus's most trusted servant, so much so that when Morpheus leaves the Dreaming, he sometimes gives him authority to oversee matters while he is gone. You know.
Lucian.
That's right. Lucian, from the Sandman series. Mm-hmm. By the way, Rex Liebrus was just the title of the comic, in case anyone is curious about that one. All right.
I don't know Latin, but it sounds like King Book.
King of the Books.
King of the Books.
There you go. So. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
All right.
Sounds Sorry. Correct Continue to me. On. No, I like it.
Or Book King.
Book King. There you go.
Collaborative effort. I appreciate
Next
this.
Next, we're going to sing some songs. All right.
Ooh. Only spoken word, though. Okay. This school librarian / mentor / father figure, he's got a lot of jobs, to the main protagonist, has been a mainstay in this fan favorite TV and comic book series that made slaying vampires fun. His encyclopedic knowledge, affinity for magic, moderate fighting skills, and willingness to kill, that was in the Wikipedia page, make mm-hmm. him an asset to fight against the supernatural evils that plague Sunnydale, California. Mm-hmm. And he currently has a miniseries which makes him the teacher, he's student again.
He's also a great singer.
This yep. is true.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name, but Donald Sutherland played him in the movie.
Yeah.
Nice.
No.
Yeah.
No. Nigel? No.
No, it's Rupert
You're
Giles.
Close.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, but in the movie, it was the original Donald movie. Sutherland played in the movie. Rupert Giles.
That wasn't Giles.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah,
yeah, it's a different character.
Different character.
He was another watcher.
Another watcher. Yeah.
Well, oh, I'm thinking of her, like, mentor. Yeah. Was he not the librarian?
In the TV series, he was.
So many iterations.
No. Oh, my God.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Because that's for our Buffy cast. All right.
Giles.
In this oddball comedy, two people find they have a similar ability. They can stop time after they, you know.
Ah.
Yeah. This character, who's a librarian, decides in order to save the library system from closure, she, with the aid of her new friend who works at a bank himself, will use their abilities to rob said bank and get necessary gains. Easy, right? Right? That's easy. There's definitely no people with this ability, right? Surely, no.
Sex Criminals.
Absolutely. But what's her name?
Oh, lady from Sex Criminals.
What's her name?
I don't remember the character's name.
Her name is Susie.
Yeah.
Lady from Sex Criminals.
Lady from Sex
from
Criminals.
Criminals.
There you go.
Okay.
All right.
What was that? Okay. Fighting in a civil war over resources on a bizarre other world colonized by humans called the Blister. The world is called that, not the humans. This is bad writing. This former librarian is my writing. Who, with help from a gunslinger, biosurgically modified silverback gorilla. This guy, who was a librarian, he doesn't die as he plans. Instead, together they wander across the wilderness encountering lawlessness, natives, and perversions of civilization in a world at the crossroads between the past and the future.
Well, the book is Six Gun Gorilla.
Yeah.
I don't know the guy's name.
Yeah, well, because his name is Blue-3425.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Guy.
Yeah.
He was Guy.
He was Guy. He liked books. Yes. A lady was impressed by this thing called books. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that was my exhilarating quiz about librarian comic book characters.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. I just want to point out that Donald Sutherland played Merrick in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, which I think, I don't know the Buffyverse very well, but I think it played the same part in Buffy's life as Giles does in the TV show.
Yeah.
If I am wrong, let us know.
He was her watcher in the movie.
Yeah.
Extrapolate.
But was he a librarian?
No. I don't know that part.
These are the important questions. Yes.
Anyway.
I'm very excited. I mean, librarians.
He watches the books.
All right.
Well, thank you, Nicole. That is quiz time, and that is our show, and we will see you next week.